I love going out on the road. I love performing. This is what I was born to do. And even more than that, I know it's a calling.
And the morning we went in to deliver the twins is when they discovered that our son Aiden's heartbeat had stopped.
In that doubt, sometimes those thoughts aren't my own thoughts. Placed, you know, there to stop you from achieving what you can achieve.
Hello, welcome to Latter Day Profiles. I'm Brian Howard. We're here at the LDS Motion Picture Studio in Provo, Utah. And joining me today is Bonnie and John Jepson. Welcome. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, we are.
Some people will have known, well, I got to know you through the John and Bon podcast. I think it was, what's the official name of it?
Notes from John with a babble from Bon.
That's right. Babble from Bon.
Yeah. A babble from Bon. Yeah.
That's because he didn't do the talking.
No, it's the other way around, love.
Just babbled here and there.
I completely enjoyed it. And, you know, it's such a great story. And, you know, I've talked about overcoming a lot of trials and doing it with grace. Really, a lot of great stories. We don't have even enough time to get into half of them, but I thought we could, you know, share some of your background a little bit.
Sure.
So I want to find out about you two. How did you two meet? Your rival high schools, apparently Highland and East. How did you two meet?
Yes, well.
Well, she was just a baby still when I was in high school, so I'm a few years older than she is. But
4 years.
Four years.
Not too bad. I used to go to firesides a lot, and he was on the fireside circuit. And so I went to a fireside, and he was the speaker. And I thought, oh, he was good. And then my mother, who my father had just died, and said, would you please come to me to an officers and teachers party, they called it at the ward way back then. And so I said, okay, I'll go with you. And he was a speaker again. And then at my sorority, he was the speaker again. And I just kept thinking, oh my word, it's a good thing he wasn't boring because I enjoyed his talk every time. So we just
remember, of course, she was waiting for a missionary at that point. You got to understand.
For a missionary, so boys were just kind of, but so I just kept going to his firesides. And so then I finally went up to him and said, oh, you did a good job. We kind of met there. And then
I'm asked to speak in a particular sacrament meeting for sacrament, and so she came walking down, sat on the front row, second row, I guess it was, and I thought, wow, that's really a cute girl. I turned to the sitting next to a counselor in the bishopric, and I, who's a good friend of mine, and said, Dave, who's that girl down there? He told me her name, and I said, is she available? Well, I have to know that her missionary that she's waiting for faithfully, this was his uncle. And I'm saying, Dave, is she available? And he's, what do I say? It's my nephew. And he said, yes, she is available. So I, after the meeting was over and she came through, I asked if she would go with me to a fireside the following weekend. It happened to be a fireside that was in, wasn't a fireside, it was a Super Sunday. I was going with my mission president, Elder Paul H. Dunn, and we were speaking in Price, Utah. Mm. 2 hour trip down, 2 hour trip back, plus the time. I didn't tell her where we were going. I just said, we're going on a fireside.
And of course, I was hopefully waiting for him, but I was dating. I was, you know, I was still going out, so when
You were waiting.
Well, I was, but I still was dating. So when he asked me out, I thought, yeah, he's kind of cute, and I liked his voice when he sang, so I said, okay, I'll go.
So we went together, and things seemed to click. As a matter of fact, on the way home, Sister Dunn couldn't come. She got ill or something. So there was, President Dunn was driving, Bonnie was in the middle, I was on the passenger seat, so we were there pretty close together, and it was really a delightful visit down and back, and we stopped in Price or somewhere on the way back to get an ice cream cone, and she went into the restroom. And
no, he asked me to call my mother.
Oh, that's right.
He said, I need you to call your mom to let her know you'll be late getting home, because I did not know I was going to Price coming back. So that's where I was.
He just said to me, he said, John, she could be a keeper. I thought she could be a Kiefer, and in fact, she was.
That's awesome. Well, good. And so the rest is, as they say, history. Well, that's awesome. So, sorry for the missionary who's waiting, but you're game. So
exactly.
Well, John, I want to talk a couple of stories. You've got so many things early on in your life, but when you were younger, you had a brother that mm-hmm. went missing. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that, because it's just one of those stories that it's like it's still never been solved.
Right. It's the oldest, at least in Salt Lake County, the oldest missing persons case in Salt Lake County. Mm. It's been a long time now. It was in really in 1965. I was a junior in high school at the time. My younger brother, Reed, was a sophomore in high school at East High as well. We were 18 months apart. It was on a Sunday, and Reed took his two little dogs after Sunday school. He took his two little dogs for a walk and never returned. We had a paper route that we did together in the mornings, and I thought, gosh, it's getting late on Sunday night when he hadn't returned. I thought, we got to get up early. Where are you? And he didn't show up and didn't show up. And in the morning when I woke up, I was assured he'd be in bed and there, but he wasn't. And I was a little miffed to think he wasn't there, because now I had to do the route myself. But he never returned. And to this day, Brian, we don't know what happened to Reed. There's been a lot of theories and a lot of rumblings about certain things that could have happened, or even pointing to a specific individual that could have been an abductor, but nothing's ever been determined or proven or anything. And it was a difficult time, a difficult time, as you can imagine, for my parents. Mm-hmm. I come from a family of 13. I'm number 8. Reed was number 9, and for them not to be able to solve this problem, my dad was a doctor, could solve all the problems, but this one, he couldn't. And it created some significant problems for my dad. For the first time in my life, here I am a young teenager, and my dad can't solve a problem. And I felt, for the first time, some insecurities as a result. And as I reflect back now, I can see that the family relationship is so essential, not just in the growing up, but be able to help one another deal with the challenges as they come along. Watching my older brothers and sisters, particularly how they deal with my brother Reed's disappearance, was insightful to me. But I've often, as you can imagine, wondered what happened to Reed, and I know that from an experience I had in the mission field that he's not alive. I don't know what happened or where it happened or when, but finally, after being home for a while from my mission, the First Presidency gave us, our family, permission to be able to do the temple work for Reed, even though a body had never been located. And he's still an important part of all of our lives still as a family.
One of the things in listening to your podcast and your stories, and by the way, through a documentary that's been done on your life, so recommend that, look it up on YouTube, very, very good, we always have a choice at that point when things are kind of gray, not quite sure, but you've been able to rely on the gospel to pull you through each of those instances. I think that's one of the things, I guess, is that it's a choice you make. At some point, you have to say, that's what I'm going to do. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely accurate. You're right, Brian. It is a choice as to how you react to a given circumstance. It is either you choose to deal with it in a positive manner, or becomes a major negative. And that can create significant problems, not from just an emotional, potentially spiritual, but it affects your aura, it affects the way you, your outlook, it affects how you deal with other people. I just gratefully at a young age, for whatever reason, was blessed with an ability to choose to rely on faith, even though I didn't understand it, even though I didn't understand God not answering my prayers, bring Reed home. And he never did.
He's always trusted a lot.
I think ultimately that's really where it is that we have to learn to trust him.
Well, you have a lot of so many stories. You talk about your missionary experience and cancer and loss of a leg, and still able to serve as a missionary.
Yeah.
I still feel bad for, was it the LTM or MTC president who thought you were faking?
Yes.
That's got to be a heart-wrenching thing. And
yes.
To realize that actually you were far from faking, and but still able to serve a mission.
Yeah, two years later. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I want to ask, you know, Bonnie, and of course, after you're both involved with this, but you lost a child. Tell us about that experience and the impact. Very painful, I know.
Yeah, it was rough. It really was. He was 7, and he'd been stung with bees like every year for 3 years, and you know, I'd give him the Benadryl, and he'd be fine. And then this one summer, he was with John up at John was the bishop, and he was up at the Skyline baseball diamond. They were playing a regional softball team. And our oldest son, Josh, and Nathan both went with John up there.
Nathan being 7 years old at the time.
He was 7, yes, that's right. And they were behind the ball field playing in some dirt with their cars, and wasps flew up from this dirt wood pile and stung all three boys. There was a little neighbor boy with them. And I guess Nathan just was susceptible, and he had anaphylactic shock, and we lost him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we had to put our trust in Heavenly Father and know that because families are forever, and because we were married in the temple and it was important to us, that we were grateful for that knowledge. And life happens. So we just carried on and love and miss him, and as do all of our children. And we go forward with faith and know that he's in a great place, and along with two other grandbabies that we lost when we were on our mission, we know where they are.
Mm. You know, that's, I guess, what I appreciate you sharing those stories, because I know they're difficult and still tender, even after a long time, still tender. But for someone like myself, it's helps me be reassured through your, you know, faith, and I really appreciate you sharing the stories.
Thank you.
I just want to talk about you served as a mission president, and that didn't go without problems either, but where were you mission president at, and how was that experience for you?
Well, we got called to in 2011 to serve in New Jersey, and as soon as we met with President Uchtdorf, who extended the call to us, and he said, now I'd like to let you know you're going to be serving in New Jersey, and we were holding hands. She just squeezed my hand like, oh my gosh.
That New Jersey mafia. Crime. Scary.
I was
far away.
And I was excited about it because my first mission as a young missionary was in New England, in Boston, and on the East Coast. So New Jersey's just down the road a piece. And so I was really looking forward to that opportunity. And
I'd never been on the East Coast. And so it was exciting. It really was. It was something new and different. And the people were amazing.
They were challenging. Our missionaries became as if they were our own, and we really loved that opportunity to try to strengthen and teach and bless the lives of our missionaries was our primary responsibility. Of course, we were there to spread the gospel through them, but you do that first by blessing the lives of these missionaries that were put in our charge. We happened to be out there at the time that the prophet changed the age for them to go, and also when they you know, there was this large surge as a result. So we went from 20 sister missionaries to 95 in about 2 months.
It was so fun. It was great.
It was incredible. They were phenomenal.
Well, you know, as I've listened to your podcast and talk about it, I would have loved to have you as mission president because you really put a lot of trust in the missionaries. And just, you know, I think that's a hard thing because obviously I have a son on a mission right now and he's a great kid. But I've seen, you know, 17, 18 and they do kind of crazy things. But to be able to, I think missionaries also feel that from you and act accordingly, I guess.
I surely hope so. My mission president was such a role model for me, Elder Paul H. Dunn, and was so instrumental in affecting my life. I wanted my missionary, our missionaries, to have that same kind of experience with their mission president. And I'm hopeful that that was the case for many of them.
Well, I hear you're very competitive. And as the story goes, I think actually Julie, your daughter, wrote this article about wall sits. Apparently a missionary was having a...
District leader,
is that what it was?
District meeting.
About endurance or something like that. And how did that happen? Tell us that story.
So years ago, I'd hurt my back, and so I had a little history of some back problem, but it wasn't an issue for several years. So then we went to a regular district meeting, and the district leader says, now we want to have a challenge here. And the challenge is missionaries. There were sisters and elders, about eight of them. He said, we're going to have a wall sit. I knew what a wall sit was. I'd done it before. And I said, well, I'm going to participate. I want that. It was a tie, wasn't it?
Well, it was a tie that he made. He made ties. So he said, I'm going to go join that challenge. I went, please don't. Please don't do that. Remember your back.
Anyway, so I went and leaned up against the wall and sat against that in the chair position. And after about 45 seconds, I felt this burning down through my back, down through my legs. It was not a lot of fun. And I hated it, but I had to drop out of the competition. And just sort of crawled over, and I says, Bonnie, I am in trouble.
And I said, I'm sure you are.
And as it turned out, I got in to see an orthopedic surgeon shortly after that, and he said, yeah, it's really true. You've got some disc issues. That you've got a bulging disc here that's creating the pain you're experiencing. And
but
you got a bigger problem. And that is that you have a large mass in your right kidney that is enveloping your kidney and now pushing up into your colon. Mm. I had absolutely no knowledge of that, no symptoms whatsoever. And so we got sent home for a time for me to have that right kidney taken out, get sewed back up, and recuperated for a couple of weeks, and then went back to New Jersey and
kept the mission going.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I'm sure the missionaries were very appreciative as well that you were able to come back.
Well, we really missed them while we were gone. They were so great.
It was nice to sneak home though and see all of our children and grandchildren.
True.
Even though he was in the hospital.
Probably under better circumstances would have been wonderful. But, you know, again, that's, you know, just more like a tender mercy, right? Cause you don't think, I've got back problems, but, and, you know, why did I have to have kidney removed? But at the bottom line is, it could have been, I guess, so much worse and a blessing.
Could have been. It's just another one of those things for me that how do I choose to deal with this? I choose to either, dear Father, why would you allow this to happen to me at a time that was so critical for us and trying to do this and that, and the other with our missionaries? But I really felt that it was something that I could turn into a positive and help it to perhaps be a faith-promoting experience, not just for our family, but for our missionaries as well, and for the members of the stakes that were back in New Jersey that would know about us.
And he's always done that. He's always turned things into a positive where I'm worried and thinking, oh, this could happen. And he goes, life happens and it is what it is and we'll move forward. And
Well, that's you, sweet.
He's good with that.
Well, we got a couple minutes left, but I did want to ask you, I found your podcast through my wife. She said, oh, you got to listen to this. And you had so many great stories. But the first one is so funny because basically you're saying, I really don't want to do this, but my kids are making me do this. How did the podcast come about?
Our older children asked if we would give little life lessons to the older kids. And so
grandchildren,
excuse me. And I said, and I thought, oh, they don't want to hear us, you know, how boring to come and sit and listen to us talk. But we decided, okay, we would. And then our younger children, Julie and Becky, said, by the time our kids get older to have this, you'll be dead. So why don't you just record all these and do a podcast? And we went, we're not doing a podcast. Like, we did not want to be out there doing our laundry and everything else.
Julie made this statement to me that I've repeated a number of times. It was, Dad, I don't want my kids to, the only thing they remember about their grandfather, you, is that you had one leg and you played the guitar. Yeah. So we want to do this documentary and we want you to do this podcast. I said, I don't want to do it. Well, that's too bad. You need to do it anyway.
Well, and he's so good with counseling and his gospel knowledge. And so it's been great for our kids. And some of our neighbors tease us about it. We get teased and stuff. But
that's how it came about.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I'm glad you made it public because there's so many stories. And I didn't realize I came into it late, but 100 episodes.
Yes.
And, you know, they're all good. They're fine. I mean, you might not think so, but I've enjoyed a lot of the different stories that you had to share. And so much so that when I was able to connect with your daughter, Julie, I said, I really would like to talk to your parents, John and Bonnie. And she was kind enough to connect me with you. So I'm grateful for that. But you are a great example of faith through adversity. And I recommend anybody to listen to the podcast or find that documentary that's on YouTube. And I highly encourage you to write a book so people can read it as well.
I told him to do that, too. And Julie's trying to get him to write a book as well.
Well, peer pressure sometimes works. So we'll see what happens.
Be really good.
But Bonnie and John Jempson, thank you so much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Brian.
You taking the time and wish you all the best. Thank you very much for taking some time.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you.